certified. Because last they heard.
You know, there was no warning. You just launched right into it. Yeah. My ear hurts.
That's because I just yelled into it.
Okay. Yeah, I'm scuba certified. And because
you got scuba certified, it's probably your ears.
There's still water in my right ear.
Yeah, probably. Yeah. It's probably going to be like that forever.
Great.
Welcome to the club.
Yeah. It was a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm. Did you think you were going to make it?
No. I thought after my last dive that I told you. I thought I didn't make it.
Yeah.
You were like, cheer up. I was like, why?
You were very upset.
I was very upset. It's a lot to go through and not make it.
It is, but you were, I can say this now because the class is over, you were by far the best in the class.
Stop. You don't have to say that.
I know, don't.
Just because you want to date me.
Oh,
that's weird.
Don't want to date you anymore? I'm just kidding.
I had so much to talk about. And now I feel like I have nothing.
Oh, I just totally switched gears for you there?
No. It's fine. I just don't remember what I had to say. That's
all. I'll lead us back. Don't you worry.
Okay.
But I just want to say, that was one of the more rough scuba classes that I've ever had to teach. So I felt bad that it was kind of like, I feel like it must have been overwhelming.
Rough as far as the conditions we were diving in?
Not, I guess conditions. It wasn't too rough in terms of that, but it was, yeah, there was like a little chop. It was cold, and then, you know, yeah, we lost our boat.
We lost the boat, the anchor.
Wait, no, that's misleading. I didn't lose the boat, as in I couldn't find the boat. The mooring line to the boat snapped, and the boat went away.
Yes.
I came up where we dropped down, and the boat was not there.
I'll
that's
tell you,
a terrifying feeling.
It was bad because that's right when the water was getting really rough.
The current had picked up, the water was rough.
Yeah, but I will say that my biggest challenge throughout the entire thing was...
Keeping your hands off me?
Wait, I was just going to say, seeing you in a bikini throughout the entire day and being like, focus, what is she saying? How do I breathe?
You saw me in a bikini one time and then I was completely covered and the only parts of my body that were exposed were like my cheeks.
The sexiest parts of your body. I've always said I'm a cheek man.
News to me. I'll make sure to put on extra blush next time we go out.
I appreciate
really
that.
Really draw that attention.
I appreciate that. Oh, man.
Tomorrow, we're going to go see The Sandlot.
Oh my gosh.
So excited.
Yeah, where's your costume? I have mine.
I'm
wearing it
right
now. I told
you, I'm Benny. I'm Mexican. All I need is a baseball tee and I am Benny. What
fair.
What more do you want? There's nothing else I can do.
Well, I'm Squints.
We know.
Okay.
Oh, your glasses.
That's what I'm saying.
They do look just like Squints.
I know.
And Squints gets Wendy at the
that's
end.
That's exactly what I'm going for.
Don't they like get married and have a bunch of kids?
I don't really remember. It's been at least a decade since I've seen that.
No, me too, but I've definitely seen it like 400 times. So
for our younger viewers.
Still...
The Sandlot is a baseball movie
that
we
my
grew
heart
up
that there's
with.
People that wouldn't
there's,
know what the Sandlot is.
I would say the majority
is.
Of people listening,
really?
Right? Absolutely.
No.
Early
it's
90s.
A classic. What was that?
There are kids who were born.
Stop it.
In after the 90s who are now adults. It's 2018.
Check your math. I don't believe it.
Check your math. Yeah, you're right. There was a leap year in there somewhere.
Let's not talk about it.
Anyway.
But I'm excited to go see. That movie. Tomorrow.
The Sandlot. Yeah, me
too. The Sandlot. It's one of the fun outdoor ones. This will be our second one. Yeah. And so my story.
That's good. So you got an outdoor story?
Stop. Yeah.
I'm not reading
it's not
it.
An outdoor story. Pipe down. It's loosely tied.
I don't feel like I'm piped up.
I'm going to start using that. Are you piped up? Are you piped up? Before we do anything. How do you answer, though? I'm piped.
I'm piped, bro.
It's getting weird.
This is, yeah.
Okay, so I wanted to find a story that, like, dealt with younger kids and, like, groups of friends, that kind of thing, to very loosely tie in to the Sandlot.
This is another kid's story? That's a yes.
Yeah.
That's a Richard's not going to sleep tonight. Okay.
I heard this, I want to go back, I'm going to go back and I'm going to find the podcast that I originally heard the story, but I knew of the story, but only, like, the main headline, like, the attention grabber. I didn't know all of the facts.
Right.
And just getting into it, yeah, it's rough.
Oh.
And with that,
let's begin.
You piped? Wait, I already forgot what it was. Is it piped?
You piped up?
Yeah. All right. This is going to be...
Yeah, already over it.
You gotta bring it down because then it gets real sad. This is the story of little Maddie Clifton.
Can I just say that I wouldn't mind having a kid whose first name was Little? It's so cute, right?
No, that's okay. Just not gonna happen. Actual first name Little, no. Moving on.
Middle I got name this, Danger.
Okay. I got this from news4jax.com.
News4jax.com?
Jax, like Jacksonville.
Oh, okay. Gotcha. Oh, it's a Florida tale.
Here we go. I didn't say it was a Florida tale. I said I got it from... It's a big story.
Can I just jump in real quick? Yeah. And we're going to get to your story. I really want to hear it. But you showed me a video that makes me think of Florida, of an alligator crawling into a pool.
Yeah.
And homeboy...
Wait, was
jumping
it in Florida? No, I think I said it was in Florida, but it was not.
No, it was in Venezuela or something like
that. It was
like
definitely
that.
In a different country.
But regardless, old boy jumped out of the pool, leaves his girl.
To be fair, he does come back. But yeah, that there was that initial...
Yeah,
his instinct is to abandon her. Which I think everyone would do. If you're in... Okay, you and I are hanging out and an alligator comes up. You are immediately going to, punch it in the face?
Yes.
No, you're going to take off until you realize, what is going on? What's happening?
Well, she didn't take off. She didn't jump
out of
the
pool. She couldn't because she was being attacked by an alligator.
I come from a long line of alligator punchers.
You do not. Prove it.
I broke the mold when I went vegan, but the instincts are still there.
Just because you're vegan doesn't mean you can't punch an alligator.
Baby, listen, I would punch an alligator for you. That's love. Would you punch an alligator for me?
Let's go test this theory. I'm going to...
We need to put that on a t-shirt. Would you punch an alligator for me?
That's a long slogan for a t-shirt.
I like t-shirts you really have to get close to read.
Is it
going to
wrap around the back?
Real small
or
font.
How is this going to happen?
just right over the breast.
I did the big picture of an alligator. I forgot to put the words, so you got to turn. Okay, are you done?
I'm done.
No, yeah, that video was a little bit...
Cray.
Yep.
Gotta finish.
Here we go. Okay, so 8-year-old Maddie Clifton went out to play on November 3rd, 1998, as she did most afternoons after school. However, as dinner time approached and night fell, little Maddie still hadn't returned home. Her older sister jumped on her bike to ride around the neighborhood, her parents hoping Maddie had lost track of time. But when Maddie's sister returned without her, her parents feared the worst. Authorities were notified, search parties formed, flyers made, and neighbors came out to help however they could. Melissa Phillips and her 14-year-old son Joshua saw the commotion that was going on and came outside to see what was happening. When they learned that Maddie hadn't come home, they asked what they could do to help. Melissa, known as Missy, sent Josh over to the Clifton's house with a picnic table, thinking they could use more space. Josh then joined the search party, and for 6 days, friends, family, law enforcement, and volunteers scoured the city looking for any sign of the missing little girl. Cut to Missy going through her normal routine, cleaning up the house. As she entered Josh's room, she noticed what looked like a wet spot on the floor near the bed.
Ah, fuck. Sorry.
That was very loud.
I didn't see it coming.
You didn't? I thought you would. Tricked ya. Okay. Missy moved closer to Josh's bed, noticing duct tape on it for the first time.
Duct tape on his bed?
Yeah.
Like a roll or like it's
holding
the
together,
bed up?
Holding portion of the sides of it together.
Okay.
When she pulled back the covers and peeked under the mattress, she saw Maddie's little feet hanging out. And as she picked up the mattress discovered Maddie's lifeless body.
How old is Josh?
14.
And Maddie's 8?
Yeah. Josh had slept over the decaying corpse of Maddie Clifton for 6 days.
My initial reaction is not a nice thought, so I'm not going to share that. But that seems like...
I'm just going to keep going.
Go on.
Yeah.
I'm going to work on my words. Yep.
To her credit... Missy immediately walked out of the house and up to the nearest officer. She glanced over at the Clifton's house, realizing they still had hope of finding their little girl alive, and that she was about to bring it all to an end. It's November 10th, 1998. Nate Glover, the sheriff, walks into Josh's room and sees Maddie's remains. Josh is arrested, and with hours, the 14-year-old admits to killing 8-year-old Maddie. Josh said he and Maddie were friends, which Maddie's parents confirm.
That's fucking weird right there, right? Why is a 14-year-old friends with an 8-year-old?
But can you imagine if you're... How many kids are on this block? Who knows what this setup is like? I grew up in a neighborhood where there were tons of kids and their older siblings. We all played in, like, a big group, so it wouldn't have been weird.
You played with older kids, like, if you were 8 and they were 14? That's a big gap.
Is it?
Not age-wise, but, like, maturity-wise. Think about an 8-year-old.
That's an 8-year-old female is the same maturity as a 14-year-old male. That's pretty much true.
Different priorities.
Okay. Josh said he and Maddie were friends, which Maddie's parents confirm, and that on that fateful day, he and Maddie were playing baseball in his backyard. He said a ball hit her in the eye, and that she'd started to cry. Josh tried to comfort his friend, but when she wouldn't stop crying, Josh started to panic. His father would be home any minute, and while he didn't like Josh to have friends over when no other adults were home, he especially disliked that Josh had female friends that were younger than him.
Oh, so Josh is like a little fucking... Can I say this about a kid? Is that not good to say? He's a murderer. He's like a little pervert?
I don't know. Nothing based on what he had done. Okay. So Missy, the mom, says...
Yeah.
Talking about Josh's father, quote, "I remember he didn't have a fondness of little girls. I remember when I was pregnant thinking, please let it be a boy. Please let it be a boy.
Oh, his dad didn't like little girls.
His dad didn't like little girls, did not want Josh to have female friends, let alone female friends that were younger than him.
Oh, jeez.
She says, I wasn't sure what I would do if I'd had a girl." End quote. So that's like a very intense...
That's a very telling statement.
...feeling about young girl. Everyone, I mean, little girls are cute. Who doesn't like a little girl? Not in a creepy way. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
they're less offensive than little boys, generally.
Sometimes I feel like saying that in a creepy way after, like, anything makes it creepy.
I know, because I feel like, I was going to say, it's like, it's weird to say everyone likes little girls.
No, absolutely, but it's universal. Like, I want a bowl of cereal, not in a creepy way, which immediately you're like, oh, what the fuck's this guy going to do to that cereal?
Oh, you eat a lot of cereal, though.
Cereal killer.
Something we should talk about later.
Ba-dum-ching.
You've been holding on to that joke for so long because you brought it up the other day.
Did I?
Oh, we're from the grocery store and there's a cereal. It's a cereal killer. Yeah, you've been like working on that. You've been trying to fit it in somewhere.
Yeah.
So you got it in there.
Nailed it.
Let's check it off.
Jackpot.
Let's never revisit it again.
Start working on my next one.
So, with his father due home any second and Maddie still crying, Josh freaks out, picks up his baseball bat, and hits Maddie in the head once or twice.
Twice?
Let me finish my sentence!
The whole point is me interrupting you with questions.
Nope. After my sentence.
Okay. Okay.
In an attempt to quiet her. You may now interrupt.
Once or twice?
Yeah.
He doesn't...
I don't know. This is the story he's giving.
That didn't bother you? That he couldn't even fucking remember if he hit her once or twice?
A panicked little boy? I don't know.
But that's the thing, was he actually panicked? I don't want to step on your story moving forward, but do you feel like he was actually panicked?
We'll have this conversation at the end of the story.
Okay.
With the little girl unconscious, he drags her to his room and stuffs her body under his mattress just as his father returns home. Now even more panicked, Josh is trying to pretend like everything is fine. But he can hear Maddie moaning.
Shit.
He dashes back to his room, pulls her partially out, and stabs her several times in the chest before pushing her back under. According to Josh, the whole thing was a terrible accident fueled by his fear of his father. The evidence tells a very different story.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not a professional detective. I realize I look the part. But no, I have scruff.
You don't have pants.
That's in your undies. That's my first case. Where are my pants? But yeah, I would say the evidence pretty strongly leans.
Well, I'm going to go through the evidence, so you don't know yet
what has happened. Hit me.
So here we go. It's going to get rough.
I feel like it's already pretty rough.
Police said that when they found Maddie's dead body, her hand was clutching the frame of the bed, indicating that she was still alive when he pushed her under after stabbing her. The baseball bat that had been used as a weapon had been stashed behind Josh's dresser. There were no indications that a ball had hit her in the eye. The autopsy did show, however, that Maddie had been hit 3 times in the head. Her throat had also been cut with a knife that was found in Josh's room, and little Maddie had also been stabbed 7 times in the chest. Her shorts and underwear had also been removed, though the report didn't show any signs that she had been violated in a sexual way. Police also took crime scene photos in which an air freshener can be seen, on Josh's nightstand, as well as a can of air freshener spray and the remnants of a recently burned down incense. All signs that the prosecution would say pointed to him trying to cover up the smell of her decomposing body. While Maddie's parents got to work planning their daughter's funeral, Josh's parents began to prepare for his trial. Because of the notoriety of the case, the trial was moved to a neighboring county in an attempt to find impartial jurors. The prosecution argued that there was no blood in the backyard or the house, only in Josh's room, and that he could have stopped the attack on her at any time, but chose not to. Josh said Maddie's undergarments had come off when he had dragged her into his room, but again, the evidence didn't support that story. There were no signs of dirt or anything on her body that would suggest she was in the backyard at all. They argue that this was premeditated murder and that Josh should be tried to the fullest extent of the law. Josh's attorney seemed to be making some risky moves in the courtroom. He didn't call a single witness to testify on Josh's behalf and argued that what started out as an accident quickly spiraled out of control. Josh never took the stand in his own defense, as everyone was worried how this young boy would stand up to cross-examination. The jury didn't take long to convict Josh, recommending life in prison with no possibility of parole. Josh committed this crime at 14 years of age, was sentenced to life in prison when he was just 15. He is now 34 years old. However, in 2012... the U.S. Supreme Court ruled that automatic life without parole sentences for juveniles were unconstitutional. That meant that Josh was entitled to a rehearing, which he got in June of 2017. On November 17th, 2017, Josh found out his fate. He was resentenced to life in prison.
That seems like a lot of hoopla to go through.
Yeah. Took a few years, too, for them to be like, nope, you can just go back to where you came from.
Okay. Are you done?
I'm done.
Can I get into it?
You may interject now.
Fuck that shit. First of all, let me just say that while I know you and I differ a little bit on our views on the death penalty,
yeah,
I am 100% behind children being tried as adults.
Really? Even if it's 14?
It doesn't fucking matter. Especially in a case that vicious where you
So what about an 8-year-old?
What about an 8-year-old?
7-year-old?
I'm not saying they should be put into Gen Pop with, like...
Well, obviously not. You know? But you think they should be tried as adults? Or where do you draw that line? What is the right age where you understand what you're doing and what you're doing is wrong?
But it's not about that. It's not about... I mean, there is a certain level of... I'm going to get myself in a hole here. But there is a certain level of do they understand? But I think even from an early age, you know what's right and wrong. You know that taking another life is wrong. And there's a big difference between something like manslaughter where it's unintentional or something like that versus what he did, where he hit her with a bat, slit her throat, was using incense to cover things up.
Stabbed her in the chest.
Exactly. You don't think that he should have life in prison? I'm very heated.
I know you are. No, I absolutely do. Yeah.
Oh, you're just being a little devil's advocate. I just wanted to say,
yeah. You know exactly how I feel about people who commit crimes against children, whether you are also a child. I mean...
Absolutely.
He was 14. He definitely knew what he was doing was wrong.
Yeah.
And yeah, he tried to cover it all up. And then, I don't know, I just think about her parents and, like, I mean, you can see even in the crime scene photos, the air freshener is next to the flyer of this little missing girl. And, like, he was out there and he was pretending to search for her and was talking to her parents. And it's just, the whole thing is...
Well, that's the thing. And nobody knew until they found the body, correct? Until Missy found the body. Yeah. Which means that he must have been playing it off well, which means he didn't have remorse.
She did. The only thing she did say was that he was very quiet during that week. But she attributed it to... there's like a child that has gone missing from my neighborhood. That's right. Scary. So she thought he was just afraid, you know?
For you, is there an age where it's too young to be sentenced to life?
I don't know that, like, an 8-year-old, you know what I mean? There's some cases of super young kids, like, torturing other kids, doing some real, like, fucked up shit. I don't know. That's something I'd have to think about.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it is tough because you wonder if they're put into more of a psychiatric program, if there's a way to still save them as they're still developing. But at the same time, if you're displaying that those tendencies from such a young age, not just to hurt somebody or there's an accidental death, but to maliciously and viciously take another life.
I think it would have been different too if it was like, yeah, they found her body and she had been hit in the head with a baseball bat and died. Right, exactly. I think that would have been a very different story.
100%.
Because even his mom backs it up where, like, her husband is a little bit weird about having friends over, especially girls. And I could see that. But then you can't, when you add up all of the other shit that he did, it's not like this moment of panic. It's this stretched out incident.
Well, it's like what you and I talk about often, which is, what are they, a crime of passion?
Yeah.
Not that it would be a passion-based crime, but like if he hit her in the eye.
A crime of passion a little bit more.
Exactly. Yeah. And like he was panicking because she was crying.
Yeah.
But then to have the space between the bat attack and coming back and stabbing her.
Yeah.
That's time to realize what you're doing.
But he also never mentioned about cutting her throat.
Well, I mean, the whole thing was obviously, like, a fucking lie. Yeah, I knew as soon as he was like, I hit her in the eye, it just... It really... Those stories do not say well with me.
No, it's very sad. And I'm going to put up a photo of her. She's such a cute little girl.
Put that up on our Patreon?
Before the episode, when the episode is out, I'll put all that stuff up, as well as probably a photo of
When he was 14.
Mm-hmm.
I have such a little sympathy for humans in general. It just... that to me... I mean, but really, to me, if you do something as cruel as that to a child, it doesn't even matter who it's to, then you don't deserve to be among the rest of us.
But can you imagine, too, his mom? I could not imagine. You find this body and you're like, okay, I'm about to go turn my young son in and I'll probably never see him again. He was arrested and then she said the only time they've communicated, he's been behind bars, so.
I think that's... It actually makes me respect the mother because like a lot of parents would have been hesitant and...
No way, yeah. Or I feel like a lot of people would have at least waited for their significant other to come home and be like, what do I do? Exactly. Instead of her just like immediately and leaving being like...
She did the right thing.
Oh, that would be so rough.
Hey guys, we're going to take a really quick break to tell you how you can get access to more than 500 horror movies and shows for free. Nothing, nada, Zippo,
Zilch. Okay,
That's right. We're talking about Screambox, a 100% fan-focused horror streaming service that you can view on your phone, Roku, Apple TV.
Or laptop, like we've been doing in bed.
Yep, we've been working our way through the Backyard Butchers category.
That's what's so cool about it. You select your main genre, supernatural, killers, monsters, etc. Then it takes you to subgenres like zombies, slashers, or home invasion movies, which I know you love.
Mm-hmm. It makes finding what you want to watch super easy. You can check out trailers, add movies to your queue, or just start watching. And right now, if you head to SOTWpodcast.com and sign up for our email list, you'll get access to a special 30-day trial. Absolutely free.
That's right. So go to SOTWpodcast.com, sign up, check out Screambox, and let us know what you like. Let us know what we should be watching.
Okay. Back to our stories.
Well, are you ready for my story?
Is it about murder?
Yep, there's a murder.
All right.
But it's not a kid. It's a college kid.
Okay.
He's 21. He can drink.
Still a kid.
No, it's a very sad story. And actually, this is the first part of a 2-part story.
Cheater. I didn't know we could do that.
So I'm going to mispronounce the name of this cult, but I believe it's the Matamoros cult.
Why do you look at me like I'm in it? I don't know.
It's... Your Spanish is better than my Spanish.
Am I saying your cult name correctly?
No, but you know, my Spanish isn't great. But anyway, Matamoros cult, we'll say it that way so that I don't have to keep attempting to roll my R's. So this case, we're going to focus right now on the murder that brought them down. And next week, we're going to focus more on the life of the actual cult. Does that make sense?
Okay, a little flippy-flop.
Yeah, a little flippy-flop.
Okay.
So, in 1989, the U.S. and Mexico teamed up for a massive anti-drug operation along the border. You like that?
Yeah. Times have changed.
It included more than 1,200 agents, a dozen helicopters, and 30 airplanes. Can I also just say this really quickly? I don't normally...
It's your story, so yes.
Thank you. I don't normally credit... my resources for stories a lot of times because they're ghost stories or urban legends that have they're just floating around.
You just don't want to.
but this story, I really want to give a shout out to Rolling Stone and the article that they wrote because it was so detailed. And I pulled resources from a few other sources, but this Rolling Stone article, they just did such a great job of outlining the entire happening around this cult. It blew my mind. So I wanted to just give them a quick shout out.
Good job, Rolling Stone.
Thanks, Beth.
You have our stamp of approval.
Thanks, Beth. Yeah, you guys are doing okay.
You guys got our SODW stamp of approval.
I think someday they're going to make some of themselves.
Yep.
Okay.
Keep an eye on those guys.
Dozen helicopters and 30 airplanes. This led to the arrest of Elio Hernandez Rivera, who was 22 and a resident of Matamoros, Mexico. After being taken in for running a police barricade and possession of marijuana, Elio began talking. A lot. He gave up several dealers and led police to Santa Elena Ranch.
Not a good call, bro.
Which belonged to his family and was a spot police long suspected was a staging area for drug runners. They were right. More than 75 pounds of pot were found. But they also found a lot more. Do you remember when pot was like...
I was going to say, remember when it was like a big deal?
Yeah.
You had like a joint on you? I was trying to gesture with my hand and realized I was holding the mic.
In a tin and tar paper shack roughly 400 yards from the main house, the Federales were struck by a wretched smell. Buried in several shallow graves were the remains of 15 men. Some slashed to death, some shot, some burned, one hanged. You hung a picture, you hanged a man.
Thank you for that.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Quick listening.
They had been mutilated.
Was the man hung or hanged?
He's hanged.
I feel like you can see you teaching like a kindergarten class. That's your example.
Yep. They had been mutilated, hearts ripped from their chest, eyes gouged out, ears torn off, and testicles severed.
Ooh.
One had also been decapitated. Because it's not enough to do the other stuff if you really want to make sure they're dead.
Gotta go for the head.
One of these men was Mark Kilroy, an American college student on spring break who had disappeared 3 weeks prior. Rewind to March 11th. Mark and three friends decided to head across the border for some spring break fun. Mark was now a pre-med senior at University of Texas in Austin and had been looking forward to catching up with his friends from high school, all former basketball and baseball teammates. Mark was blonde, well-built, and had a classic all-American look to him. It wasn't far from their intended destination to Matamoros, an area crowded with spring breakers looking for cheap booze and quick hookups. The college boys parked their car on the American side of the border and made their way across, ending up at a Hard Rock bar. Mark began chatting up a girl who had come in third in the tanning contest.
Oh,
God. I know, third. You gotta go for first.
It's gross.
After some flirting, the four boys left empty-handed.
Empty-handed? They were supposed to carry these girls out the door?
No, just without phone numbers or anything like that is what I was intending.
I got one.
Okay, well now I'm completely lost my place. Oh, yes.
Oh, no.
Empty-handed.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And started back across the border. One of them, Bill Huddleston, ran off the trail to pee and later reported hearing some guy say something to Mark like, "Didn't I see you somewhere earlier?" or "Where do I know you from?" When Huddleston caught up with his friends, Mark was gone. He searched their path but couldn't find him. The boys went home, assuming Mark had headed off with some girl, and didn't give it another thought until the following morning when he still hadn't turned up. Something was wrong. The search for Mark quickly escalated from, "Oh, he might be drunk somewhere," to a true missing persons case that the authorities on both sides of the border, with the authorities on both sides of the border suspecting foul play. Unfortunately, both sides of the border were also short on leads. Hospitals and prisons were checked, and eventually a hypnotist was called in. Under hypnosis, Bradley Moore, another of Mark's friends, recalled seeing him for the last time talking to a man with a cut on his face. Over the next few weeks, Mark's parents put up a $15,000 reward for his case and for his return, and his case was featured on the crime series America's Most Wanted. Still nothing. It may have ended as a cold case had it not been for the random stop of Elio Hernandez Rivera. As we know, Elio's confession led to the unearthing... You're being very quiet. Are you into the story?
I'm listening. All right. Gosh, you always get so mad at me of ruining your stories. I'm listening intently.
Yeah, it makes me worry when you don't.
I'll be sure to ruin the next one for
okay,
you.
Okay, thanks, baby.
You're welcome.
As we know, Elio's confession led to the unearthing of Mark's body, along with 14 other men. It also uncovered a shack doused in blood, with candles still burning, where a kettle was found filled with iron and wood spikes, a charred human brain, and a roasted turtle. There is a photo of this. I will post it on our Patreon page. Other containers held blends of congealed blood, animal bits and pieces, and human hair. The room was tousled with various trash and clutter, as well as a blood-caked machete, electrician's tape, and a hammer. There was also a sizable oil drum that had been used to boil some victims alive.
Jesus.
It was a slaughterhouse. A true human slaughterhouse. How you doing over there?
Great, yeah. I'm so glad we're having dinner after this.
Lieutenant George Gavito, one of the first U.S. officers to arrive on the scene, said it was unlike anything he'd ever seen. After the grisly discovery, Elio had a bit more to say. Along with four other testimonies, it came out that the boys had been a part of a human sacrifice, ritually slain in the belief that their deaths would make the drug gang immortal and protect them from the police. When arrests began, two of the gang members brought in were wearing human vertebrae as necklaces, claiming it made them invisible and kept bullets from harming them. I'm going to say if you're caught...
The cops found them.
Yeah. your vertebrae necklace not working so well, bro. When they were pressed who murdered Mark Kilroy, they simply responded, "El Padrino, the Godfather." Their testimony led to warrants for the arrest of 5 more gang members, including Adolfo de Jesus Constanzo, who was 26. He was a gang's leader and the mind behind these heinous acts. Along with Adolfo, a warrant was also issued for Sarah Aldrete. I am butchering these names. I apologize. A 24-year-old student who would soon be known simply as the Witch. The suspects went on to say that Costanzo had ordered the sacrifice of a white student and that when they first grabbed Mark, he almost got away, but they were able to wrestle him into the car and drive him out to the ranch. There, he was bound and gagged with heavy tape, but told that he would live. He was fed bread, water, and eggs, and then, approximately 12 hours after he'd been taken, under the promise of false release, he was let outside where Costanzo killed him with the swing of a machete to the back of his neck. His leg was then severed, his brain and spine removed, before being buried in a shallow grave. At several points during the interrogation, the arrested cult members referenced the movie The Believers. Have you seen that one?
Mm-mm.
So it's a 1987 horror movie starring Martin Sheen, where a cult in New York City conducts human sacrifices in an attempt to gain money and power. As part of their induction into the cult, these people have been made to watch the movie several times over. I mean, the number of movies I've seen several times.
Sandlot.
Sandlot. I remember watching Three Ninjas. I guess I acted like a ninja for a little bit.
Oh, but we all did. We yeah, tried. Yeah. Nobody wanted to be Tum-Tum.
Aww, Tum-Tum. Further examination of the shack would reveal objects of Santeria, a Caribbean religion, and Palo Mayombe, a dark mix of voodoo and African gods from the Congo. It was later theorized that Costanzo was going after a specific spirit of Palo Mayombe named Agun, the patron god of criminals and criminal activity.
There's a god for everything.
There's a god for everything. That should also be on a t-shirt. I like it.
I already forgot the first t-shirt. It's a good thing we got it.
It's something about alligators.
Something about yeah. Megan bit. I don't know.
Oh, my.
Your story was so long, your iPad shut off.
Hey, it's not an iPad.
All right. I know how you feel.
Kindle. All
right.
So next week, we're going to discuss The Godfather, his witch, and their reign of terror as a sadistic cult. There are going to be some twists that you don't see coming, and some things that will make you seriously...
I'm going to see them coming now, because you told me that they're coming. So.
But I feel like this is a story that it's... I'm going off script here, but when I was when I was reading it, it really made me question... You'll see this next week, but just everybody in my life.
Ooh.
Because, like, who can you trust? Who do you know?
Nobody
exactly,
ever.
Exactly. I do want to really, really quickly note that neither religion currently practices human sacrifice. It was a darkness that Constanzo became engaged in after a trip to Haiti. But those who commit human sacrifices in the name of these religions are thought to be practicing negative energy, and it's not condoned by either, from what my research showed.
Way to cover your ass.
Thanks. What do you think?
It's, I mean, I don't know. The whole thing is crazy, but I don't know why I keep going back to, like, the parents. Can you imagine finding out how your son died in that, like, horrific way?
Absolutely.
I don't know that I could, like, continue, like, go on living. Like, how do people not bounce back from that? Because you can't ever, but, like... Oh, man. I mean, don't know.
These were people that had watched a movie and thought...
I know.
That makes sense.
Because people are crazy.
And I guess the one, you know, bit of, like, peace of mind they can have, it's so far from an actual sense of peace, is just that he was killed first, before the mutilation of his body.
I was going to say, at least it sounded like he died quickly.
Right. Whereas it sounds like some of the other people maybe weren't so lucky. Mm. Some of the people who were hanged or burned in the oil drum.
And how sad that he almost got away, though.
I know.
Oh,
I know. Because you got to figure he's kind of a, you know, a strong guy. He's an athlete. There were just too many of them. They wrestled him back to the car. And that's just the thing. Is you not, like a simple, that's what I think we talked about this about a week ago. It's like you never know.
Oh, that was when we talked about the stalking of Laura Black.
Yeah, like you...
You never know when you're just going to get caught in, like...
Exactly. Something that has nothing to do with you. Something that has
nothing to do with you, yeah.
And that's it. It's over. Like, any day could be your last, which is why I tell you I love you every single day.
Say that, sweet.
Well, yeah.
I love you, too.
Well, thank you. Yeah, so a couple of...
That's really heavy.
Pretty this heavy stories. This was a really stories.
Heavy episode.
And I feel like we're going to have some heavy
media. I already knew, like, coming into it, it's so hard to be, like, upbeat and energy when you're like, I'm going to tell you this, like, deeply horrific story of this child who was alive and dying under a mattress by herself. Like,
Jesus. And that, yeah, and that's the thing is we do try and inject levity into our stories. And, but it is tough. It is tough when you do stories like this. They're not always going to have moments for jokes. But hopefully people still enjoy listening to them.
Yeah, because,
I mean, for me, I don't know about for you. For me, it really is like this, just my fascination with these types of stories is the study of the human mind and how easily it can be warped and...
Oh, yeah, with all the cult stuff.
Exactly.
Very interesting, yeah. Because a lot of them, too, will be like, pretty intelligent people or have good jobs, and it's like, how do you sway that person?
Right, exactly. Well, there's that fucking, wow, we made it through almost this whole episode without swearing and I just ruined it.
You are so far off. We've said fuck at least 5 times.
Oh, really?
Yeah, you started too.
Okay. I don't listen to like 20% of what say. the rest I'm just nodding.
Like right off the bat in my story, you started with it.
Did I really?
Yeah.
I have a potty mouth.
speaking of
the
which.
The sex cult was what I was going to say.
What?
You know, the sex cult, the girl from Superman.
Oh, that's right. Yes, yes, yes.
These are successful, somewhat successful actors, TV actors, who are recruiting women basically for sex trafficking.
Yeah.
It's, all right, what were you going to say?
People are shit.
People are shit.
You said potty mouth. I was going to say, to lighten it up, that video that we watched with the little kids.
Oh, it's pretty cute.
There.
All right, we'll leave on that
note.
We
should put that on some little lightheartedness.
Some young boys got a hold of their moms, figured out their mom's Alexa
shopping
list.
Because they're smart. They listen to you. Like,
yeah. They put some pretty funny stuff on there.
Pretty funny stuff, yeah.
We'll post that up there as well to bring a smile to your face. So I do want to say really quickly before we sign off that I'm so...
He always has something you want to say really quickly.
I'm going to say this real quick.
Tell me super quick. Go.
Do you remember the Micro Machines guy who would talk really quick during the Micro Machines commercials?
Micro Machines? I don't know what a...
You don't know what a micro machine is?
A small machine?
This is
going
to be our longest
about.
Episode because I'm going to explain to you exactly what micro machines are.
Is it a small machine?
They're tiny cars. The tiny cars that you would...
Oh,
race.
I do know. I do know
Thank
what they're...
You.
Okay, don't give me
whatever.
That. I didn't know that they were called micro machines. They should be called micro cars. Makes sense.
I mean, honestly, that is a more apt name.
Yes.
But...
Oh, we just said apt at the same time. That's a high-fiving. Self-contact.
I just want to say thanks to everybody who's been listening. We've been getting some really good engagement from our listeners.
What does that have to do with... Oh, he talked fast. Okay.
No. Yeah, I was just saying
this
before we sign off.
Where does that tie in
but,
for the micro machines? That person talked fast.
Yeah, that person talked fast. Okay. Anyway, so thank you.
Yeah, we've gotten... Thanks for
listening. Thanks for listening. Thanks for...
Enjoying. Maybe. We just keep talking at the same time.
Okay.
We need to go to bed.
Yeah. All right.
Check us out on SOTWpodcast.com. We are up on iTunes. Finally.
Took 16 days.
Took a long time.
Yeah.
And
else?
A bunch of other platforms as well. So all that can be found from our website.
Absolutely.
As well as our Patreon page. Oh, which we're going to start posting up photos, videos,
and mini-episodes, too.
Yeah, mini-episodes are coming as well. I have my mini-episode ready to go for tomorrow. Do you?
Son of a bitch.
Beat ya.
That's love.
I win. Okay. All right. That's all I got. So, good night.
Sweet dreams.